From Chapel Hill, North Carolina, you're listening to The Monty Podcast.
I was an only child, and so I spent a lot of time watching TV because, you know, I'm a thinker.
My great-grandmother, whose name was Elizabeth Darby Barbara Farabee Caroline Jane Keith Warren. Her husband called her Puss.
Because, I mean, when you're dating someone, you would never give them a personal grooming device.
They were playing ska and reggae and punk rock. I come out with Annie.
I'm Jeff Polish, founder and executive director of The Monty. The Monty is a nonprofit that invites people from the community to tell personal stories on stage without notes. On today's episode, we deal with the complexity of a lifelong friendship. Friends from birth, with the bond of siblings. But some sibling relationships come with fierce rivalries also. Rivalries that could last a lifetime. Here's Kevin Ginsberg with his story told on November 20th, 2013 at Motoco Music Hall in Durham, North Carolina.
I pick up a copy of this hardback book and feel the weight of it in my hands for the first time. I admire the glossy covering and run my fingers down the spine. I smell the pages as I thumb through them. I had been dreaming of holding a copy of a book that I'd written. All my life, I'd wanted nothing more than to be a published author. The title of the book is, I Am a Genius of Unspeakable Evil, and I Want to Be Your Class President. It's a fiction book, to be sure, a young adult novel, but when childhood friend Josh Lieb and I were in seventh grade, we ran for middle school president and vice president together. I'm really excited about this book. The only problem is, I didn't write this book. Josh Lieb did, and he got a $1 million book and movie deal out of it. Fucking Josh Lieb. Our moms were both fat Jewish women named Gail, and they were pregnant all 9 months together while Josh and I were in utero. It was proclaimed that a Jewish boy would be born in June of 1972 in Columbia, South Carolina, and God would bring his hand down and touch that boy with world-class wit. Josh and I were born in June of 1972, 5 days apart, and he was my first friend. We both wanted to be writers from the time we could read. That was about 6 years old for me, about 18 months for him. I was a good writer and a smart kid, but Josh was a brilliant writer and a true genius. He had this crazy red curly hair, freckles, glasses. He picture Alfred E. Newman, the cover boy from Mad Magazine. That was Josh. His favorite TV shows in first grade were The Twilight Zone and The News. He was socially competent enough, but at parties he could often be found wandering away to go read. When I was about 9, I flexed my own writing muscles and wrote a series of books about a kid named Stu Henderson. They were terrible. Stu Henderson comes home from school, he gets a snack, he goes to play basketball, he takes two, and 100 more pages like that. But they showed where my passions and desires lay, and my mom sent a copy of one of the books off to a local editor, got my hopes up that I could get a book published. He told her to give him a call in about 20 years. Josh and I spent our entire childhood together. We were always hanging out, and we used to go to these baseball games. We used to go to the University of South Carolina Gamecock baseball games together. We would hang out with a group of people who called themselves the world-famous third-base hecklers, heckling out demeaning comments to the opposing team about their mamas and stuff like that. Even though we were just kids, Josh could smack talk with the best of them. Like when we played the University of Southern California, the Trojans, he would shout out things like, "Cox will penetrate your Trojans." And other cutting-edge cat calls that he would come up with. In seventh grade, like I said, we ran for middle school offices together. I ran for president, and I didn't have any competition. Josh ran for vice president. My campaign slogan was, Kevin Ginsburg for middle school president. And I handed out stickers to classmates to wear that had that slogan on it. Josh handed out stickers to classmates with a picture of me laying dead in a coffin. His slogan was, what if Kevin dies? So, I don't know the degree to which Josh ever really felt like he was competing against me. I think he did to some degree, but I always felt like I was competing against him in every way. And it wasn't so important to me that I win as it was that he not. In grade school, the competition seemed balanced enough. I got to be president, he was vice president. He was the better writer, but one time I got a poem published in the school newsletter and Josh got all jealous. I was the better athlete, but one time I kicked a ball and it flew mistakenly into our own net. Josh heckled me relentlessly that entire next week, every chance he got in this fit of schadenfreude. And we didn't just sit next to each other in every single class in school. We had Sunday school together and Hebrew school together and soccer practice together and carpool. And so he had a lot of time to schadenfreude his shit all over my ass. So Josh and I were good friends, and we were jealous competitors. And I've foreshadowed a little bit, I suppose, but now is where I transition the story to and towards adulthood and let you know, sadly remind you perhaps that the story is, or the theme for tonight is not winning it. So I switched high schools in 10th grade, and Josh and I didn't see nearly as much of each other those last 3 years. And then we went away to college, and we really kept up with each other only through reports from our respective Fat Gale moms. Josh, I went to UNC Chapel Hill for college. Josh went to Harvard. I learned how to drink beer from a beer bong, and I started watching episodes of The Simpsons. Josh started writing for the Harvard Lampoon. I practiced really hard and got really good at drinking beer from a beer bong, and I memorized episodes of The Simpsons. Josh became editor-in-chief of the Harvard Lampoon. The next time I actually saw Josh was not until 1998. We were about 26 years old. It was my sister's medical school graduation in Charleston, South Carolina. He had a good friend that was graduating as well. It was an outdoor ceremony, and I had wandered away from my parents for a moment to go sneak a cigarette and some much-needed me time. The stage of life I was in at that point was I was had multiple piercings, hair down my ass, had gone to 1 year of law school, dropped out of that to go teach grade school for 2 years with the Teach for America program in Baltimore, and then that's what I was doing at that point, and about to come back to law school and also go to massage school, none of which I really wanted to do, because the only thing I really wanted to do was be a writer. Now, admittedly, I hadn't ever really spent all that much time actually writing. On top of all that, the very day before this graduation ceremony, my girlfriend back in Baltimore had gotten afraid that she could possibly be pregnant. So that's the stage of life I'm in when I go sneak a cigarette and some me time when I spot Josh Lieb. As for the stage of life Josh was in, I had heard from my Fat Gale mom, but now I got to hear from him that he was a writer and producer for an NBC sitcom starring Phil Hartman called News Radio, which is a cool gig and all, but it's not like he was writing for The Simpsons or anything. It was good to catch up with Josh. It was good to talk with him for a few minutes. And although my prayers that week went something like, "Dear God, I bless my mother, bless my father. If you could, however, see to it to perhaps even the playing field a little bit with Josh, that would be great." 11 days later, Phil Hartman was murdered by his wife, and News Radio was canceled within a year. My relationship with God darkened that day. I did go on to massage school and law school. I was kind of this new age hippie freak who was reading books like The Celestine Prophecy and going to workshops on self-empowerment to try to help me have my life go the way I wanted it to go. Meanwhile, Josh was having his life go the way he wanted it to go, or the way I wanted my life to go. He didn't stay at the with the Simpsons for all that long, though. He yeah, I probably should tell you that after News Radio was canceled, he got a job as a writer and eventually executive producer for The Simpsons. Which is what he was doing when my new girlfriend back in North Carolina and I decided that we wanted to buy this farmhouse in the mountains of North Carolina that we fell in love with. We wanted to turn it into some sort of hippie retreat center and have people come and do yoga and give massage and drink kava kava and get their chakras rearranged. And we called up a bunch of our hippie friends and asked them for money, and we were going to do this thing, but we needed a lot more money. And that's when I kind of lost it and called up Josh Lieb out of the blue and asked him for money for this retreat center. Which was a really weird thing to do, because it's not like he was in my circle of friends anymore or that he had any kind of interest in that kind of a thing. He was very polite. He asked me to mail him more information, which I didn't have, so I scurried to create a pamphlet. I never heard back from Josh. My girlfriend and I broke up anyway, and this sort of weird, ill-conceived plan was aborted. But in the weeks and months that followed, I was left humiliated, realizing, my God, I'm that guy who calls up an old friend and asks them for money for no reason other than that he had made it or that he had it. It was a really humiliating experience and one of the biggest regrets of my life. I went on and graduated from law school and started practicing law, and I've been doing that for 10 years now. And I have a beautiful wife and two great boys, and I've spent the bulk of my adult life, you know, not writing. Josh stayed at The Simpsons for a year or so, and I didn't pray for anything to happen. But he stayed with The Simpsons for a year before taking on a new job as a writer and then executive producer, and then lead executive producer for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. He won 7 Emmys. He truly became a world-class and world-famous heckler. Fucking Josh Lieb. In 2009, the TV writers had a writer's strike, and Josh took the opportunity to write a book, which I'm holding in my hands, this book that I'm excited about reading, but also jealous about, and sort of in this prolonged midlife crisis. I read the book, and you know what? It's really, really good. It's got a few glaring editing errors in it, but besides that, I really enjoy the book, and I email Josh up to tell him. And I push send receive every minute until he responds, and then we email back and forth for several hours developing this email rapport like we really never had. He tells me that As He Remembered Me in 7th grade was one of his inspirations for the book, and I took the opportunity to apologize to him for what I had done several years before when I'd called him out of the blue and asked him for money. He was very gracious and shook that off as if it was nothing. And it was great. It was a really healing experience for me until I emailed him one more time and told him about the editing errors and there was silence after that. So a year or so later, it's 2010, the Daily Show with Jon Stewart and the Colbert Report came together to do this thing called the Rally to Restore Sanity and or Fear in Washington, D.C., and I decided I wanted to go to that. It was in Washington, D.C. on the Mall, and I emailed Josh up, told him I was coming. He emailed me back and invited me to the after party. So I go to the after party, I find Josh, we embrace. It's probably the first time he and I ever hugged. And Jon Stewart wasn't at the after party, but Stephen Colbert was, and all the other writers and directors and producers of both shows, which I really didn't care about meeting any of them at all. I just wanted to hang out with Josh and catch up with him, which we did. We talked about the third base hecklers, and we reminisced about soccer games and student council elections and our fat Gale moms, and we talked about writing, his and mine, and he was very supportive. And one of the things he sort of advised me on is that one of the most important things to do if you want to be a writer, it's really not so much necessarily about whether the hand of God touches you and makes you into a witty guy, but that you have to actually spend a lot of time writing. Which I've done a lot more since then, and actually for the first time landed my first side gig as a paid writer. It was a great time to catch up with Josh, and the envy was gone, the jealousy was gone, and really I was just there with my first friend. In February, Jay Leno will be stepping down from The Tonight Show and Jimmy Fallon will be taking over. As proof to you that I really have gotten over my jealousy at having epically lost it in this lifelong futile competition with Josh Leib, I'm very pleased and proud to announce that the next executive producer of The Tonight Show will be none other than my first friend, fucking Josh Leib.
That was Kevin Ginsberg with his story told in November of 2013. Kevin is a former school teacher and massage therapist, current personal injury attorney and pickle maker, and wannabe writer. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast episode. This program was produced by Jeff Polish, and the story you heard today was recorded, mixed, and edited by Michelle Morano. The music you are hearing was written by Django Haskins and performed by The Old Ceremony. If you like what you heard and want to subscribe for downloads of our free weekly podcast, you can go to iTunes, any other podcast app, or just link from our website. For more information about our organization, upcoming shows, or to listen to more stories, log on to themonti.org. That's themonti.org. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week. I'm Jeff Polish.